from Pontiac, Michigan, born Elvin Jones. It's titled Four and Six. It's from his 1962 album, Elvin. And we just heard his brother on piano, Hank Jones, and Art Davis on bass as well. The Jones brothers are like the triumvirate of jazz. You had, again, Hank on piano, and Ben on drums, and Thad, Brother Thad, the famous trumpeter. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we'll be talking today, having had the benefit of some time to let this so-called big debate percolate a little bit. Monday night's overhyped corporate media-hosted big debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is yet another reason the duopoly's stranglehold on electoral politics must end. So, is that likely to happen? When? How? We advance our own ideas on how widespread voter disaffection with the status quo might provide, it might just provide, an excellent opportunity for so-called third parties and movements to plant new seeds in fertile political soil. Now, what do I mean by fertile political soil? People are really disgusted with where we are. And they're disgusted also with the fact that, you know, you have to choose between, you know, really awful choices. Why is it considered a good thing to arrive at a point where your choice is between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton? And then there's the rest of the folks, you know. But obviously, people are being conditioned to believe that there is only one thing to do. I mean, the main parties are the choices. That's it. And everything centers on that. The media really haven't moved away from that premise at all. They have been covering these races for time immemorial as a two-party contest, essentially. And yes, from time to time, we see somebody coming up that's outside of the system, but they don't really matter. They don't get any coverage. They're just, as the media would portray them, they're also rans. But we also have to take note here, I think, of what the demand is of third parties that do have extra potential, and but maybe not performing at peak. I mean, is the Green Party, as you see it, is the Green Party ready to go? My feeling is that we have to take a look at alternative parties very seriously, no question about that. But we also have to take them to task. It is one thing to say that you're small and you're starting out small and you're making a strong effort. But you have to act and you have to convey that you, small as you are, you've got it together. You've got it together to make a very credible start. So where does that put us as voters who feel compelled to participate in the process? And do we feel okay? Do we feel confident that we're doing the right thing by supporting a particular party that may not be part of the duopoly, that may be a party outside of the system? It's got good people, it's got good ideas. But at some point, we have to say, look, you know this thing called politics. You got to get your ducks in a row. You have to move far more aggressively to do some of the basic things. One of my criticisms of the Green Party, for example, and many other smaller parties, is that they are not understanding, or they seem reluctant to understand, the importance of aggressive, for lack of a better term, marketing. They think, well, this, you know, you don't want to do that because it so closely resembles the modus operandi of the duopoly. But you have to get your message across. You have to be in communities. And you have to fight for your turf. You have to animate your ideas. You have to go after an available vote, willing to hear from you, wanting to hear from you. And they should feel very confident that a vote cast for you is a great political choice. Not a gamble, not a, quote, throwaway vote, but that you're moving clearly in a direction in which their votes will count. This is important. I've talked about the anesthetic effect of continual losses, and it turns people off after a while. It gets people to thinking, well, here we go, I'm voting again because I don't like the Democrats, I don't like the Republicans, so I'll cast my vote with this party. But I know it's not going anywhere. That is, I see it as one of the major impediments to the growth of third-party movements. They do not inspire people who want to vote for them, people who have no desire to vote for the duopoly, but do have a strong desire to participate and vote, looking for something viable. But also, I mean, you can't discount it. You can't discount the psychological impact of the vote. People, especially when people are voting in protest of the system, all the more reason to make them feel a bit better, a lot better, about casting their vote with us. So we'll be talking about that today. And for media literacy purposes, if you care to talk about the big debate, you certainly can, which to me was just one huge yawn. It was just pathetic that in the home stretch of what is considered to be an extremely important election, that's the best we can do. I mean, all the way around, including the media and whatnot. But huge amounts of money spent, and we can't see how this money equated to better candidates with better ideas, and certainly with the media doing its job. In this particular election cycle, I think the media, they need to go back to journalism school. And they certainly confirmed that it's all about the money. It's all about the money. You can't tell me that as an anchor for umpteen years, these are the questions, the questions that people were asked were like, who approved these things? I mean, how do you use such valuable time with such a huge audience and issues of importance, and you come up with these vapid questions, and then, of course, you get vapid answers. And there we are. So I have to report that I suffered for you. I hope you appreciate it. I watched the whole thing. I wasn't going to. I did not want to torture myself that way before going to bed. I like going to bed being, you know, with a relatively calm mind. But I watched the whole thing, and I, you know, my brains went crazy, saying, "I don't believe this. This is where we are. All this choreography over two very undesirable candidates and a media doing a really poor job in this election cycle of covering these elections." All right, so we will talk with this focus in mind today. And I'd like you, I mean, sincerely, let's really emphasize more so the opportunity here for third party movements to be able to capitalize on the disaffection, the wide disaffection of voters. And they have something to say. They have something to say. They have something to offer. How do they use this moment to galvanize support? Do you think it's even worthwhile? Do you think that they do you think they see this opportunity? Not just the idea that, well, okay, we're going up against the Democrats, we're going up against the Republicans. But it's not enough to simply say who we are not. We are not them. Okay, we get that. But who are you? And what are your plans? What are your strategies for getting into the communities, taking advantage of this moment where people are so turned off? Isn't this a brilliant move for them to make at this time to really get into organizing and getting their message across? Do you think they're doing enough of that? And let me be clear. This is not about beating up third parties. We get it. You're starting off on the rough side of the mountain, as they say. You don't have that kind of multi-zillion dollar budget. You don't have infinite resources of any sort to conduct nationwide campaigns. But in the case of the Green Party, for example, you've been around long enough to have achieved certain milestones. And we should not let them off the hook. This is my point. Don't let them off the hook because they're new or because they're small. Because in the end, they still are asking for your vote. And your vote still should matter. All right. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I'd like sometime in the course of this program, we'll probably pair up a couple and see what you have to say to each other. Henry from Chicago, you get to start us today.
Hey, Teresa, how's it going?
Okay, how about you?
All right, you weren't the only one that was suffering through that. I was invited to a debate watch party, and it was just really, really, how should I put it, sickening. Because I felt like I was, you know, I felt like I was watching the Monday Night Football game because it's, you know, like I'm around a bunch of African Americans who are for Hillary, and it's like every time Hillary said something, there were all these cheers and boos for Donald Trump, and I just like felt like I should have just stayed home and watched the Monday Night Football game if I was going to get this. But you know, it's interesting. I was listening to bits and pieces of it, the some of the stuff that I can stomach and take. However, here's the interesting thing that really stood out to me. It actually made me really, you know, think about this because, well, it didn't make me think about it, but it gave you a tidbit on what's really going on. All right. So when the question came up about, you know, security, American security of other countries, Donald Trump, you know, was talking about how we protect Germany, Japan, South Korea, and I think he said Saudi Arabia, and we get nothing, you know, and we basically get nothing from it. There was one country that he purposely omitted, and it just stood out like a sore thumb, and it's Israel. And it's like we give Israel the most protection out of all the countries in the nation, and he didn't mention it. So it was like that moment where I was hoping somebody else caught that. Like, did you hear what he just said? You know, he named all these countries, but he never named Israel. So it's like that's something that should stick out. It was the only thing that was interesting out of the debate that I caught. So it's sort of like, you know, everything else, like I said, was just a yawn. In regards to the third-party politics, you know, we have to understand that if, you know, if we don't, if third parties want to get into this race, you know, understandably, they don't have the resources like the Democrats and the Republicans. It's going to have to be a time effort, and it's going to have to be persistent. Right now is where they need to start planning for the 2020 election. I mean, it's got to be right now. And even not with the presidency. I mean, they could, you know, the third-party politics can probably try to invade some local big city politics. Like I said, Rahm Emanuel is not the most favorite man here in Chicago. Somebody can come in and jump in and try to get into this race and have a good chance of winning at this. So, and in other cities, I'm pretty sure there are other politicians and other machines there that the people are not very happy about, and this is their chance to get in on this. So there has to be a level of persistence with this because of the fact that, you know, the Green Party or any other of these parties that want to get into it, they don't have the money that the Democrats and the Republicans can come in and, you know, just spend away, you know, and win these elections, you know, because of the money that they hold. I mean, there has to be persistence here, and they have to get into these communities and change the minds and also the paradigm of thinking politics, you know, amongst the people, because I think people, you know, have this thing where, you know, we only have to choose Democrat and Republican, and I think it's, you know, we have to change the paradigm of politics with the thinking of people here. So,
well, Henry, you're in Chicago. Here's Ray from Florida. Why don't we listen to what Ray has to say and see where you both go with each other on this?
Hello, Henry. Hello, Yefreys.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Meet Henry from Chicago.
Yes. Hi, Henry.
Hey, Ray.
Well, this format kind of throws me for a loop, but I guess you're going to question us, Yefreys?
No, I just want you to start talking and trading ideas.
I'm ready to do that. One thing that hasn't been mentioned, I think it's really important regarding the Green Party, is that if they're polling at 4%, they're probably going to do a lot better because there are so many disaffected and disappointed people with the big two candidates. And if they cross, if they get better than 5% in the general election, I believe that will get them federal matching funds, and then they can really market, and then they can really, you know, start to wallpaper everything with information. And so this is not the time to say, you know, well, they're probably not going to do too well, because that 5% is really the key to future growth.
No question about it. However, the 5% has been a slow growth. Do you get the sense that the Green Party is really, really getting involved in areas where people are ready to listen to what they have to say and willing to support them? I'm sure once they hear the programs that the Green Party is pursuing. But the Green Party the constant complaint that we get is that they're not there, they're not seen, they're not part of the community.
Well, I'd like to turn that notion on its head and really talk about the passivity of American people. In any election cycle, I can decide who I favor, if anyone, with about 30 minutes of intense research. And, you know, people that roll their eyes and play it coy and say, oh, well, I still haven't decided, it really nauseates me. And that's why we now have a presidential election that lasts almost 2 years, during which point nobody governs because they're too busy campaigning. So if people need to get it through their heads that, you know, if they're curious about other parties, to take the first step themselves, to go online, to look at the position papers, to call up and volunteer if they're so inclined, and to be proactive. It really frustrates me when I hear this notion that the Green Party has to do more outreach, because, as has been mentioned, you know, they have very limited resources and they don't really have a national network as yet. So it's up to individual citizens to do their part and inform themselves, and then they should then, you know, be seeing if they can open a campaign office in their town.
Okay, you know, Henry, what do you think about that? Does Ray have a valid point here in saying, look, if you're a voter, you're not just one, you know, a blob of protoplasm waiting to be pleased and people coming to tell you why you should be involved with the party. You should also take the initiative to find out what's going on in your interest. What do you think about that?
Well, looking at it from a Chicago point of view and looking at it from where I sit at, I mean, he has a point, but then also, too, I also have to add this as well. In Chicago, one of the reasons the Democratic Party is so entrenched in Chicago politics is they offer whatever the black community needs to get their vote. Now, mind you, it is shallow, but it's there. Like, if you want a job in the mayor's office or in City Hall or anything like that, you have to go through the Democratic machines. And there are deals that is being made to some people who are part of, you know, quote-unquote grassroots organizations where they do things for the mayor, and then at that point they promise them, well, you know, you do this for me, you get me these number of votes, and we'll give you this money from City Hall, you know, or to whatever projects that you want to do, because the Democrats are offering them something tangible. That is outreach. Now, see, the thing about the Green Party is that the Green Party, I mean, they're not even making their presence known here in Chicago, which is at least come by and tell us, you know, hey, you know, Democrats are doing this, Democrats are doing that, and at least make their presence known. I mean, I understand that the Green Party doesn't have the resources that the Democrats have to offer, but people, especially people here in Chicago, they want to see something tangible. They want to see, you know, what do you have to offer them? I understand that voters need to go out and educate themselves, but the thing is that more powerfully in the community, a community has to vote as a block. You know, they have to vote as a block in order for their vote to count. And if the Green Party could at least do some outreach and do some community outreach within the Chicagoland area, it will be more impactful for them. And over time, they could, you know, the community will start seeing the ways that the Democratic Party has been raping black and brown communities in Chicago, and we'll be able to make some sort of difference into, you know, beating the Democratic machine here.
So, Ray, in this moment that we're in, we see the juggernaut of the duopoly. You know, it's all about the Republicans and the Democrats. What do you consider to be a moment of great opportunity here for third-party movements?
Well, one moment that was taken, and I don't know if anyone noticed, is that on RT, Russia Today, Jill Stein did a simulcast with the debate Monday night, where she was commenting in real time on what both the candidates were saying. That's just as an aside. So you want to know, again,
what would you consider to be fertile soil that could advance the interests of a third-party movement, or that could help a third-party movement come to the fore as being a good alternative for people looking for an alternative?
It saddened me so much that you made six attempts to contact the Greens and that it probably, you know, got filed away by some volunteer who didn't realize an important opportunity was being passed by. I don't know if you have a red phone on your desk, the Black Agenda Report, but I do know that I've corresponded with Glenn Ford, and I know he responds, and he recently interviewed Ajemu Baraka, and if you could, I would say, you know, contact Glenn, ask him to contact Mr. Baraka, and ask Mr. Baraka to directly contact Jill Stein and say that there's an interview opportunity here with Yatrice Lee. That's something that's been on my mind. Aside from that, I don't have a silver bullet in terms of, you know, a game-changing play here.
All right. We haven't mentioned the big name that should have been mentioned by now, and that's Bernie Sanders. What is to be done with Bernie Sanders at this point?
He's put himself out to pasture, and I don't think that, you know, there, people are even saying that he was given this $600,000 lake house as some kind of quid pro quo for backing Hillary. And I can't, you know, confirm or deny that, but it is, that fuck is out there. But I don't think he deserves a single wasted breath. You know, he turned on his own people, and that's kind of the ultimate betrayal in politics.
Henry, what do you say? Could Bernie Sanders still serve a useful purpose here?
He can serve a useful purpose, but indirectly. I say this because, just like you keep saying, Bernie Sanders needs to be called out to the carpet. And it shows the people that they're not going to take betrayal from their politicians. And this is something that needs to be said, because the one thing I tried to call last week in regards to the speech that Barack Obama did, and the thing is that he gave a key clue on what we need to do, because he said that, you know, it will be an insult to his legacy if we don't vote for Hillary Clinton. Well, you know what? That's what we need to do. We need to insult him before he goes out.
Because we need to insult his legacy and not vote for Hillary Clinton.
Exactly, and that's what we need to do, because the thing is that whoever is the next president is going to come in and think, it was like, well, black folks had Barack Obama for 8 years and they never demanded anything from him. So we need to display to the public how disappointed we were with him. And that's the same thing with Bernie Sanders supporters. They need to display displeasure to the public on how disappointed they were with his capitulation with the Democratic Party.
Well, I want to thank you, Henry from Chicago, Ray from Florida, for talking with us today and sharing your thoughts.
Thank you both.
Thanks. Queens, Ed, you're on the air.
Teresa, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. What is your thinking about the state that we're in, as bleak as it may look for people who reject the duopoly? What is a kind of silver lining here where there might be an opportunity to do some serious turning around?
Well, there's fertile ground now more than ever, because of the mass dissatisfaction with both parties, and a perfect example is the two candidates that we have presented before us. I mean, you know, I'm tired of holding my nose and pulling the lever, so to speak. But what we need to do, I mean, everybody's talking about Jill Stein and the Green Party, Libertarian Party. My beef with any third party movement in this country has been their lack of presence during the four-year cycle between an election. I mean, if the Greens really want to reach out to people, I know their platform is to environmental justice and environmental correction, which is great. But you have to be more well-rounded. You have to reach out to the African-American people. You have to reach out to the Latino people. You have to reach out to the poor. And you have to be a constant presence. You have to politically educate people, and that's what I don't think the Greens do. I mean,
but at the same time, I mean, I think the observation from Ray from Florida was very legitimate. It's a small party; it has limited resources; it can't do everything. And besides which, is it the party's job to do everything for the voter, to educate the voter, to reach out to the voter? Doesn't the voter or the potential voter have a responsibility as well to educate him or herself about options?
Well, I mean, the voter has the obligation to educate him or herself, yes. But you've got to deal with reality. And the reality of this country is that we're dealing with a lot of low-information people. You understand what I'm saying? A lot of people that don't understand the process, a lot of people that need education. I mean, you don't even get civic classes in school anymore. When I was going to school, you used to have civics classes. You used to have understanding of government classes. Now you can talk to some of these children that go to high school, that go to even go to college, and they don't even know how a bill is presented and turned into a law. I mean, when you're dealing with that much low information, you've got to make an extra effort to at least bring somebody up to speed before they can look for themselves. There's a plethora of information out there now with the internet, YouTube, all of these accesses to information, but a lot of it's garbage, and people don't know how to ascertain it because you're not taught to think anymore. You're taught to consume. You're not taught to think. And that is what the Green Party, any other political movement needs to address. You have to educate your people before you can let them educate themselves.
Okay, so I'm going to give you an assignment, Ed. And your assignment, you're going to take on an organizational role here. You're the head organizer for a third party movement that is trying to do something and trying to achieve contact with people, trying to, you know, get their ideas out, and trying also to face down the duopoly. What are you doing?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's a long process. First of all, you have to reach out to neighborhoods. You have to establish a presence in the areas where people will accept your message. So I would start, you know, it all goes back to basics. Knocking on doors, handing out flyers, being at the train station, being at the bus stop, letting yourself be known, letting it be known what your party platforms are, what you stand for, and meetings. All politics is local. Start off with your local offices. I've said this 100 times. Councilmen, anything from dog catcher to mayor. Once you start to infiltrate the city council, once you start to infiltrate the assembly, once you start to infiltrate even your district, your school district, you got to take a look at what the Tea Party did. You've got to take over the local offices, because then you can do things like redistricting. Then you can do things like getting local elected officials. Then you'll have a modicum of control, and then that control will spread to the federal eventually. But it's a process. It's always a process. But education, make your presence known in the neighborhood. Participate in other things. Participate in community events. Make yourself known. Become familiar with the people. Once you do that, then you will start to see results.
And you've got Ephraim, to be patient. Ephraim Edgewater, please meet Ed from Queens.
Hi, Ed from Queens. How are you today?
All right. How are you?
I'm doing right. Okay. How are you, Therese? How are you feeling, Therese?
Fine, thank you. So you've listened to what Ed has had to say. I'm going to give you the same assignment, but from a role of trying to decipher from what Ed has offered, what makes sense to you? How do political movements in this time utilize this moment that we're in to advance their cause and to make the best use of what I consider to be fertile political soil?
All right. I have to... I'm sorry, I'm forgetting his name already, and I just came on. I'm talking to the other caller. His name?
Ed.
Ed. I'm sorry, Ed. I have to agree with him. We have to start at this local stage and gradually build ourselves up. But we have to get somebody in there that's willing to speak up, make a lot of noise, say the same things Trump's saying, say the same thing that Bernie was saying, get noticed. Get the American people, we don't pop up our ears from our telephones and our computers till we get somebody being outrageous and saying things that are ridiculous, really, but we seem to enjoy these things. And then we take notice, and then the press sees we're taking notice, so then they take notice, and then we get somebody who's getting some notice, just like Trump is and just like Bernie got. But we don't have anybody like that because Jill Stein, she put a little toe in the water, and I don't think she wants to say anything. She's like a little rabbit, and she's waiting too long. She don't come on your show. What's the point of having her in there as a Green Party candidate if she ain't going to do anything? So we need somebody like a Chris Hedges who's going to be a strong person and is going to say things to get the attention, and then once we have their attention, then we can start putting down things. Because the way they have us in this political system, well, we call it a duopoly, but Charles will agree, it's a uniparty system acting like a duopoly. It functions like a monarchical dictatorship, and they've been doing this to us since they murdered Kennedy because they don't want to have same mistakes again. I understand our ancestors and the people before us, they fought and they marched and they got killed to get us to have this vote, this right to vote. But they're not doing this the right way. If you have a Republican Party and a Democratic Party, when people register as a Democrat, you already know they're going to be voting Democrat. So before the election, they already have an idea of how many people are voting on the Democratic side and how many people voting on the Republican side before they even decide to count votes.
Where do you agree with Ed from Queens about the moment we're in? What circumstances or conditions do you see as being very helpful to a third party movement?
The two candidates that are running, can you get any worse? I still don't understand what. I mean, I don't know. Jerry Brown was on BAI. I thought he might be a good person to, but now I guess he got too old, but I'm sure he could have beaten out Hillary. I don't know. I'm just mesmerized that this is the two people that are actually running for president. So all we needed was somebody with a brain in his head that could just like make fools of these idiots that they really are. But they have us so, conditioned. They have us so in a corner that we just can't seem to like think about it. But we have this opportunity. Yeah, Bernie should come with Jill Stein and she should have been saying the same things. Free medical, free college, we're going to build a wall twice as high as Donald wants it. The Mexicans are going to pay for it. We're going to get the Russians to do this. We got to keep saying all these promises because it's not going to matter. Once you become president, you do what you got to do. You need to make these promises and get notice.
Well, I want to thank you both for your ideas today and for bringing them forward for our consideration. Thanks so much, Ed from Queens, Ray from Florida. Thank you so much. E from Edgewater. Thank you so much. We go to New Jersey. Michael, you're on the air with Machine from New York. You're on the air.
Hey.
I want to ask you, Machine, is that the name you're going by today, Machine? All right.
Yes.
What is the moment that we're in, what does it mean to you as someone, I'm presuming, that you are neither for the Democrats nor for the Republicans? You are for something else. What is that something else, and what is it about this moment? Even if a third party does not win, but what is it about the nature of the moment that creates fertile soil, an excellent opportunity to build for eventual victory?
Thank you for taking my call, Yatrice. I agree somewhat with, you know, the last two callers, but, you know, everybody's putting it on this local movement and how we need to, like, you know, have, like, Jill and even the Libertarian Party candidate need to be out there, you know, and we know that the resources. So I'm not here to preach to the choir, like everybody else, right? I just want to say that it's important for all of us to now take the step forward. We all have a phone in our hand, in our pockets. We are not slaves to the mass media anymore. So why are we giving it any fuel? Why do we care? You know, like what they say on the news, we get it. You know, we're the choir, okay? So I don't have to say how corrupt and how fixed the system is. But it's important for us, you know, to really go after the alternative sources of media that are getting the message of Jill Stein out. And you know what? You have to go out and look for it. Okay? So, I mean, like, if it takes a few swipes with your finger and a couple of clicks on your phone to, like, to listen to what Jill has to say, then you should encourage every person around you and every person in who's listening to my voice right now should encourage people around you to listen to Jill Stein. I've done it to, like, four people today. You know, I get in conversations. We talk about the Scarecrow and Hitlery. And then I say, look, just look into Jill Stein. Just look what she has. She's there standing up for the people. We all know that. Now, again, I want to say, just like I did months ago, that it's really not just, you know, like Bernie Sanders was when I called in last. And what should he do? Well, he can't do anything. He's already married to the institution. So, you know, if you expect anything from these other candidates, you're crazy. Right now, it's fertile soil, Patrice, because it's a mockery, and we should all be insulted by what we've witnessed for the last year with these clowns, these sociopathic clowns, representing us and our what we feel our government should look like and our foreign policy.
So Michael, what do you think of what was just offered here? Do you think that there is a moment? I mean, it need not be all this bleak news, you know. I didn't mean to indicate that I feel despondent about it. It's just that we should understand the moment that we're in and how best to build on it so that we could advance an entirely different way, a political alternative. What do you think from what Machine said? Do you feel hopeful about it? Do you see any thing that in what he said that could be applied at the moment to begin to build third party movements or rebuild?
Yes, I do. I agree with what Machine said, but he doesn't really offer that much in way of, I understand that we have to get involved, and we do. But one of the things, you know, we all in this particular time and place, we all want instantaneous results. You know, we want to take an ocean liner and spin it because we can do it on the computer. But in real life on the ground, that ocean liner is not going to turn around, you know, with the move of the cursor on your computer. You know, things don't work that way in the real actual world. But we've been taught to live in a kind of an alternative world that's a world of our imagination and not a world of actuality. But I believe that, you know, the future is now, and I think that could be a good bumper sticker. The future is now, and there's an alternative that exists. Now, why can't a third party like the Green Party of Jill Stein, you know, embody many of the things that, you know, some of the things that Bernie was saying, but now he's irrelevant, of course. But also some of the things that, you know, the 99%ers were speaking about, and make a people's party out of it, very inclusive. But they're not, you know, the duopoly is going to oppress them, of course, and they're not going to let them through the media. And the whole thing is rigged, of course. But this is such an opportunity. I agree with you because it's such a positive opportunity.
Hey, bumper stickers are a great idea. I think it's great to, like, get the word out, but it's important for all of us to realize that if you put, like, a singing cat on the Internet, you get 40 million hits immediately. Why can't we get, is it, Utrecht, please correct me, is it, like, 40 million votes and then we can kind of have a runoff or some kind of, like, inclusiveness?
I don't know what the number is or how it actually works. I really don't. So I could check into that.
Yeah, so I agree with what Machine is saying. You know, why can't the Green Party put out zillions of bumper stickers? They're cheap.
Who's going to pay for it? No one's going to pay for it.
You can put things in the subway. You can put stickers in the subway and say,
how about putting our life,
hold a second, Machine. Let Michael finish his thought.
Yeah.
There can be posters, the billboards. These things can get around the major media and hit the people where they live. Every telephone pole can have a sticker on it saying an alternative exists. The future is now. And then, you know, and then say, you know, vote for the Green Party, you know, and then you can have this embodiment of what it is. You could have an organizing principle around that. I remember that movie, V for Vendetta. Remember that movie?
Sure.
With the mask, you know. But
yes.
There was that kind of thing where the posters were all around. Something was coming. Something existed, an alternative, because the oppression of what was in existence was so severe that people just wanted an alternative. And of course, this is such a joke. Now the opportunity is so great now because it's so in your face. This ridiculousness of the duopoly has come to a point where it's become so ridiculous, so in your face, that of course an alternative has to exist. And the future is now. What you do now is important. So if we don't win this year, make it the year that's now that you begin to vote for a third party. And so they'll say, they'll raise their eyebrows. Wow, they got 15 to 18%. We better take that into account. Next year it's 25%. So maybe we shouldn't think of it as immediate, you know. But the future is now. You got to begin somewhere.
Machine, you get to conclude here.
Absolutely, I agree. I think it's great. I mean, like, everybody's so fixated on the win mentality, but it's, you know, the win mentality doesn't take into consideration that we can come from behind and take this thing over if we just get out of the win mentality and get off of, you know, watching your television to say, oh, well, I would, but, you know, this one's not going to win, so I got to vote for this one. Really, the point that you brought up in the beginning of this conversation.
Thank you so much for your call today and for participating and of course sharing the stage with Michael from New Jersey, Machine. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks. We still stay in New Jersey with CC, and we have Ali from New York. Hello, CC.
Thank you so much, Dietrich. Thank you so much. I just want to say first that you are liked, loved, and appreciated
Thank you so much.
More than you can imagine, more than we can actually say. And we do have more work to do to get more people to know about your work, your life work.
Well, thank you. What is this moment? And how do we capitalize on this moment that we're in to really solidify a base, cultivate an awareness, and to move forward? What would you say, if I were to give you the assignment in a couple of sentences, to tell us what would be the first items on your agenda to achieve these goals?
Well, first thing is to decide. Is to decide what do you feel seems to be the best for us overall at the moment. And that's 2016. And then 2020. So I decided that, which I decided with Bernie. Okay, I'm with Bernie. I've been with Bernie. And I have to say, I'm still with Bernie to whatever he can do. I appreciate everything he has done. And from that point, and I have Bernie buttons, I think that the first thing we can invest in is in buttons. There's a website, ETSY.com. I'm not related to them financially, but that's where I got my buttons from. And I now have Jill Stein buttons. I was in a store and I was talking to a woman about some things that were important to her daughter. She came up to me, she saw my buttons, and she saw Bernie, she saw Jill Stein, and she said, "So who are you voting for?" And I said, "I'm voting for Hillary Clinton. I am seeking to move on Jill Stein." And so I say Jill Stein is the person. Jill Stein and Barack are the people for the future. Now, what makes it happen? I do. And the people that are willing to roll up their sleeves, willing to start going six doors up the street, six doors down, or six apartments down, six apartments up, and start the conversation and start getting it going. We are the ones. It isn't them. We have to learn something. We really have to learn that by letting them do it, this is what we have. Everything that's going on that we saw Monday, we deserve it. We deserve it. Now, if you want something else to happen, then you're looking for something to turn up, as I say, begin with your sleeves. So I'm going to say, get some buttons, few bucks, wear them. I have a Jill Stein license plate on one of my vehicles. Just got it. So that, you know, we got to invest. We got to commit. Jill Stein is a person, but I think for the moment, where I see most people of color, where I think the greatest opportunity to make something, and of course we got to keep the feet to the fire for Hillary if she's the one.
Donald, well, let's find out from Ali.
Out of the question.
What do you listen to what CeCe said? What makes sense to you? And what do you see as the opportunity here to begin to galvanize support for third-party movements?
Okay. Hi, my professor. How are you doing?
Okay. meet CeCe from New Jersey.
Hi, CeCe. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. The first thing that I had to say to him is that he said that he had put
Talk to him directly.
Okay. One of the things that I had to tell you, CeCe, is that the first thing to support Jill Stein, you have to get rid of one of your cars because it sounds like you have more than one. And first of all, that is bad for the environment, I believe.
Well, it might be electric.
Yeah, that is, oh, well, I hope so. But that's one of the things that I have to say. And going back to some of the things that he has said, I voted for Bernie, but I was not for Bernie, okay? My vote here on the primary was a vote against Hillary. I never really believed Bernie because I knew where Bernie was coming from. Bernie reminds me of Al Sharpton. Bernie was, he did the same thing that Al Sharpton goes around when somebody get killed and it's get killed by, and they get killed by the police department. He was a representation of the Democratic Party to make people quiet. And then he went away. I have a millennial here where I bought him a Bernie button. He bought a T-shirt from Bernie, but he knew all along, because we used to talk, about what Bernie will do at the end. And he didn't disappoint me at all. And another thing, I do agree, and I think you made it implied to this, Jill Stein should just forget about 2016 and take 2016 to start working on 2020. Because every time that Henry calls up and he talks about Jill Stein, the first thing that he talks about is that in a big city like Chicago, people, they don't know about Jill Stein. So how can she expect to people to vote for her where in big cities, people haven't even heard from her? She should be recruiting people now. Forget about all these interviews. Listen to what she did on the day of the debate, the so-called debate. She was protesting here in Long Island. You know what she should have done? She should have gotten a place, get some live streaming, and let people stream some and answer some of the questions that they were being asked to those two clowns that they were in that so-called debate. She did it on RT, but you know what? Because I didn't bother to watch the debate, I didn't even know that that was happening on RT. So how can you get to a channel that people, they don't even know that you will be on? So that is my saying. She should just completely forget about 2016, start now, to recruit people for 2020. That would be the only way that she would get anywhere. And they started working with the Bernie people, the people that they had caught off Bernie and these millennials that they don't want to have anything to do with Bernie.
CeCe, you get to sum up.
All right. Oh, yes. Okay. Here's, I'm going to go backwards here. Okay. First of all, we got to understand 80% of promotion is motion. this is the time for the motion. She gets locked up. She gets moved out. She gets arrested. That brings media. That brings attention. She's one person. He's one person. Maybe there's another 100. Maybe there's another 200. It's not enough. We are the ones. We're looking for somebody else to do it, and we're the ones to do it. So she's got to be, she's doing what she can do. We all know, and she knows, the key is to get involved and get attention and get a momentum going for 2016. Absolutely. So she needs to be front and center, okay? The second thing is, there are different views about Bernie. I understand something about the game. Not a lot.
You have to wrap up quickly because we're out of time.
Okay. All right. I know something about politics. One of the things is, whatever changes, we don't know what was said. We don't know what was threatened. We don't know what was going on, what happened to Bernie. But he made a shift. And I will say this, because we're a country of assassins. We're a country of doing things to people. Bernie has done a great job doing what he's done. I appreciate it. And we're moving on, and we use him when we can.
Thank you, Ali. Thank you, Cece. And thank you all for getting us started and clearly indicating that we need to continue tomorrow. So we will. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll continue tomorrow. Bye-bye. Thank you.